It was intended for the human to support the machine to support the human.
And AI means something different to anybody you talk to, which is wild.
This is AI or Die.
Welcome to AI or Die, episode 25. It's the summertime. It's 2025. We have a lot to cover. We got some news, especially with OpenAI and some of the other orgs starting their own browsers. We have a lot of enterprise insights from Andreessen Horowitz that we're going to share. And then later, we have a great guest. Ben Blanquer is going to join, talk through a lot of what he's seeing on the agentic space. So it's going to be a great episode, everybody. As usual, let's start off the top with personal lives. How are we doing? How's Align AI? I'll start. We're seeing a ton of use for enterprises with using Align AI for their business-facing intake and discovery, which is super exciting. Their governance, reviews and approvals, and then ultimately that data science team collaboration and translation with the business and the governance teams internal too. So seeing a ton of adoption on the customer side, it's always exciting to see them starting to demo your product inside of their organization too. That was quite a pinch me moment this week. So things are good. Personally, it's still summer break. So in and out of different vacations, which has been fun. Obviously getting some time by the pool and trying to do some camping later as well. But
I love that you say summer break because your wife is a teacher.
It feels like it for me too. And I know it's a uniquely American thing. Like we have customers in Europe that are like, wait, so the kids are out of school for like 2 or 3 months consistently. Like it's such a uniquely American thing. I know even some cities don't do it in their schools, but I like it. It helps bookend the year. We get Christmas break and summer break. I like
that's
that.
So funny.
Plus, they kind of help with the harvest, right?
The harvest.
The harvest's like, not going to bring it itself, right? Like it's not going to bring itself in.
We got to go till the fields. That's why we have time zones and daylight savings time and summertime as well, for sure.
I never call right. it
maybe
summer
AI
break.
Will make it. Yeah, we'll have robotic harvesters so the kids can stay in school all summer. And that's the next innovation, right?
That's the future of it all, is no more summer break for the kids. Pools close across the board. Yeah. How are you guys doing? Reagan, what's new in your life?
Oh, you know, just trying to bear through the summer heat.
Right. Yes. Yes. We're kind of hot days of August. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are good. Things are good. Yeah. Just a lot of really, really exciting things that are happening, but I'm so tired.
Yeah.
But it's hard to like get excited about it just because you grind really, really hard to get to that milestone and then you do, and you're just too tired to throw a party. So.
I am trying to build in little celebrations, little wins here and there.
Yeah.
Yes, it's tiring. The work continues, but it's worth celebrating. It's very exciting to hit our goals when we set them. That's cool.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a really great year. It's been a hard year, but it's been a really, really great year. And there's so much going on. And I think it just keeps it fresh and exciting. I'm excited to get into some of the insights in one of the articles that I know you had sent over for this episode. And there's a few other kind of newsworthy things that I'm looking forward to getting into. But yeah, things are good.
Brendan and I were just discussing this. It's like more and more patterns consistently inside of the enterprises we work with in terms of their areas of focus, their maturity starting to coalesce as well. It's very exciting because like we've had hunches over the years around how things would go. And it feels like real progression this year, especially middle of the year too. So Brendan, what's up with you, man? What's new in life? How you doing?
It's good. I think this is the first podcast since I got engaged. So we got engaged. That's exciting. That's so that's been great. And then we went on a trip to Greece, went to the Greek islands, Milos and Santorini, like last week. Was that last week? 2 weeks ago? Something like that. It was amazing. Super fun. Really great. Highly recommend it. Good food, which I was super surprised by, but it was very, very good. So put it on your list for the Mediterranean / Aegean. Check out the Greek islands for sure.
I know a lot of listeners are going to be bummed that Brendan's off the market. Sorry, guys. He's taken. He's married. He's engaged. So, yeah, we're going to lose a lot. There's going to be a huge listener drop-off after this
episode. Huge drop-off. Huge drop-off. Huge drop-off. That's why people are here. This is why they're listening. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. Exactly. Cool. Well, with that, let's get into the news. I know we have a lot to cover before our guest joins. I want to start with a couple softballs, but I think very interesting stuff. We'll pass it to some of the governmental stuff going on. And then I want to end with really the big study around CIO spend and like Gen AI focus areas. There's a run to market for browsers. So Google Chrome, the de facto Google browser that a lot of folks use as their entry point whenever they're going to search and learn something. Both this week, OpenAI and Perplexity are aiming to launch their own AI-powered web browser to try and grab onto, obviously, the traffic and create more of an end-to-end user experience across mobile, desktop, anywhere they go and get information. They're trying to be that first stop to kind of take on the titan Google, and Google Chrome is that starting point. I think it's super interesting that both release announcements on the same day this week, if not within a couple days of each other. Wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that. I think we saw it coming. We talked on a prior episode just around like the user experience with AI and trying to centralize that all. But what are your thoughts on OpenAI and Perplexity trying to create their own web browser to challenge Google Chrome? Brendan, I'll start with you if you have some thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I noticed like obviously Perplexity is very search focused, and that's a big change I think with AI that we're seeing is like I'm using it so much more than Google. Like Google is to go navigate to a specific page I already know about, but if I'm actually like searching, trying to find stuff, I'm going to OpenAI first because I feel like it does a better job. I've also seen, I haven't used the new browser stuff, but I have seen like some of the experiences. I feel like we have just such high expectations for some of the things that we do that it will be very hard. So I know like OpenAI is like Google Maps kind of applet or plugin thing that they have in the chat just is terrible compared to Google Maps. So I feel like there are some things that I'm curious to see how they kind of like pick their fights in this, because there's a lot of stuff you do in the browser. There's a lot of the stuff you do in search, like which pieces will AI really outperform what exists in the offerings today? And then how does Google and some of those more incumbents, I'm sure they'll come back kicking once like those things are established. They'll probably be coming back with some really strong functionality as well to some of these newer upstarts.
Yeah, because I know even for these episodes, we pulled news articles, relevant stuff each week, still going into each website, dealing with the paywalls and the ads and just sifting through all the noise. It's a pain in the butt. So if this can help improve that, or at least challenge Google to create a better solution for end users, I'm all for it. Reagan, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, when you think about the paradigms of AI today, there's kind of three in my mind. And some of them blend together to create their kind of own unique experience. But search is definitely one of them, right? We're looking for something online. We're looking for resources. We're looking for sources. That's why deep research was such a big hit. It was like, can we provide tons and tons of context to get as many relevant sources as we possibly can? And people still use, you know, ChatGPT or even the AI capabilities within Google search to find simple answers to simple questions, right? We're just kind of querying for information. Mm. I think the second thing that people are using it for is this like back and forth brainstorming and more complex planning and deliverable based information. This is really hard to do, obviously, in a Google search. That's why people go over into these other tools. Because they can do this fairly complex back and forth iteration of generating some sort of Excel file or output or, you know, case study or document, right? We're talking about more of a productivity type of output based experience, which is not just search. And then the third is still kind of new, right? It's when ChatGPT launched their operator capability. So these agentic capabilities, which is not just search and it's not just iterative back and forth, but it's action. So can something take action on my behalf? And what I was looking at across all of these different tools, because Perplexity is obviously launching a browser, but so is OpenAI, which is still considered unconfirmed, but you know, they're most likely going to be launching their own browser to compete with Google. They're trying to combine all the experiences into one place. Why else do we use browsers? Well, we try to get to different websites, right? And so you just type the website into that browser. So there's kind of those four things, if you count that as like a direct link experience into the browser. And so what I think is really fascinating is that this browser experience is probably going to fundamentally change, mm-hmm. right? We're going to start shifting into more of an experience where you have an agent kind of riding alongside you to help assist in some of the action-based activities that you want to do. But you can also do this more dynamic, complex back and forth, ideation, brainstorming, things like that, in addition to search. Mm-hmm. And I think that is generally going to be the future from a browser perspective. You also have to think about all the other innovation capabilities that Google Chrome brought about, right? It's not just that experience. It's all the back end work that the Chrome team has done inside of Google.
Yeah.
And these other players are going to have to catch up to that, including performance. Also just the general experience of managing tabs, there's a lot to it. So I'll be really curious to see how that transforms. I've also seen more and more pop up, these browser companies for the enterprise. Mm-hmm. They're trying to reinvent this idea of a browser for a company where that's where the associate starts. And I think if you think about the most archaic example of that, that's what SharePoint tried to do. Yes. And everybody hates it. So yeah. I have seen some really cool companies that are trying to get to market to be the enterprise browser. So I just think the idea of a browser is going to fundamentally change.
It's that management of mass amounts of information, not just serving the content you're looking for, but helping to provide the context and help you comprehend it on top too. That enterprise browser is so interesting, and I want to see how that emerges as well, because so many are toying with that chat with our HR information, chat with our employee onboarding information. Like, understanding the conversational experience is nice for a lot of folks, but still making it so it's not overwhelming. Because classic quote is SharePoint's great for the first few pages, but once you have hundreds of bits of information that's out there and trying to sift through it all with all the formatting that's built into, it's near impossible, and it creates just another pile of a drive of files you have to sift through, basically.
Glean's trying to do this too, right? Mm-hmm. For the enterprise.
Yeah, interesting stuff. So we'll see how the browsers evolve. You make very good points just around, one, everybody loves Chrome. Everybody I work with seems to really adore it. Firefox kind of came and went. Edge is still struggling to be that de facto space, Safari too, but there's a lot built into a whole browser and what experience they're trying to create for people to basically chat with all the information that's out there.
Yeah, and I did see one of the articles that I thought was pretty fascinating was, there's been a lot of conversation about the fact that Google has a monopoly when it comes to browsers and search, and so they've been trying to break the monopoly apart.
Yep.
And there's been talks about breaking Chrome out into its own separate entity, and then there's been talks about OpenAI trying to purchase that if they do. Yeah. And the ironic thing is that the browser that OpenAI is building is actually built on top of Chromium, which is the open source version of Chrome. So just so interesting to see how all of that's playing together.
Right on. On to the next story. I just want to spend a minute on the big, beautiful bill. I know, Reagan, if you could please just provide a quick summary around just some of the changes for that, because then I want to make sure we have some time for just some of the spend in the Gen AI space for enterprises that I think is super relevant. But there's been significant changes recently in terms of the level of regulation associated to the innovation that they're trying to drive inside of the US for AI.
Yeah, so Big Beautiful Bill passed officially on July 4th. Not here to provide my opinion on that bill one way or another. However, there was a portion of the bill originally called out that would put a hold on the state level ability to create their own regulation and laws around AI, which several have done, including Colorado and California. If you want more information on that, I think we covered it in the last episode in more detail. So you can go over to the last episode to check that out. But they actually removed it before passing the bill. So they realized they weren't going to get a majority of folks to agree with that. And it was removed before it got passed. So although it was being proposed, it did not make it.
So what does that mean for enterprises? You think less state level regulations? Let's look
more.
At
I mean, more. They, yeah, because the bill was saying, we're going to prevent states from allowing them to have, their own individual laws and regulations around AI. This was cross-state commercial. There were some stipulations around that. However, they were going to remove their ability to do that, which meant that everything they've already passed would have been null and void, and they wouldn't have been able to enforce it. Mm. That's what the bill was proposing. And that got removed from the bill. So there's no change. So all the state level laws and regulations that are currently in place can be enforced and will be enforced. and there is no change to that. So there was a threat to the states that they would have to revoke that, and now that is no longer the case.
Gotcha. Thanks for clarifying that. Okay. Thank you. That'll be very interesting, especially for different states across the U.S. in terms of managing this as well. One more story I absolutely want to get to. Andreessen Horowitz did a very large, wide-spanning 100 CIO survey across 15 industries, just understanding Gen AI spend in that space for 2025 and beyond. I just want to share the high-level bullet points for our listeners because I think it'd be especially valuable. Just as they're looking at what is their enterprise doing and how does it compare to maybe the rest of the space. So some key takeaways that I want to communicate with everybody. So first of all, budgets, AI spend blew past expectations and is here to stay. One CIO noted, what I spent in 2023 is now what I spend in a week on Gen AI and LLM budgets in that space. So spend is going significantly up, and that's projected to be continuing to stay up for a while. Gen AI spend is also graduating to permanent budget lines. Historically, a lot of teams had this stuff roped under innovation budgets or temporary ones, but now it's graduating to more permanent spend areas. And that's something that they also see will continue to rise over time too. So dedicated budget for Gen AI and ultimately like its own line item that people are going to manage against. Other ones, let's see. Model landscape is crowded, but clear leadership is emerging. Enterprises are really adopting OpenAI as the go-to. I know they started a lot in Microsoft's Copilot. A lot of them are shifting to OpenAI, ChatGPT Enterprise. Google's rise has been more pronounced in large enterprises. Anthropic is seeing a ton of adoption in more tech-forward, specifically software companies and startups. And then open source models like Llama and Mistral are tending to be higher at larger enterprises. So that usage is going up over time, and OpenAI is really starting to dominate the enterprise space, which is interesting. We've seen a real flip from Copilot, especially in the past few months, to that.
Yeah, I think the piece that we're seeing right now is that somebody referred to it as AI is becoming part of the fabric, right? It's just like it's part of business, right? It's part of like similar to the collaboration tools. Like it's just expected that that's kind of part of how we're working. I think that's a very fast adoption that we've seen, right? I don't know if I've personally worked with any technology that's kind of gone from that innovation kind of center idea to a like mainstay in the fabric of the business. Of course, companies are at different levels of that adoption, and we're seeing different levels of maturity around it. But I do think that's going to be what we'll see on the budget side, right? Like the growth and then the stabilization of the budgets, but also just like anecdotally how people are working with it is becoming more and more commonplace. So I think we're in that phase of like productivity tool being available. And I think the next piece will be how do we achieve differentiation? What's the impact to our products, our offerings to our customers that enterprises are capable of doing? I think that's probably like the next big phase that we'll see, especially with agentic coming into the mix.
For sure. And just related to that too, it looks like enterprises are really starting to get into that more AI buy lane. A lot of them are shifting from the internal build to more of the buy as the spend priority in terms of where they're putting their money here. And they're, as expected, applying a lot of the rigor of traditional software buying towards AI solutions, Gen AI solutions. A lot of conversations, especially in the SaaS startup space for AI, was about experimental revenue, understanding how much these enterprises are really kicking the tires with a lot of new Gen AI software they're bringing in. A lot of this year is bringing that rigor around price sensitivity, spend, and how it's really applied towards usage-based pricing and other pricing models inside of this space too. So the shift to buy continues to grow in terms of spend on this space, and then just building in more rigor around the evaluation for vendors and spend up front too. Switching costs are going to continue to be high. And really, because just this whole app ecosystem is really scaling, especially in the past 12 months, a lot of more organizations feel more comfortable buying it and bringing it in a lot more quickly as well too. That's the key stuff. We'll share the link to this study in our description for the podcast, but I thought it was just interesting. I love that we're actually taking this stuff seriously. We're dedicating actual budget towards the space, and that prosumer market is continuing to be driven by early app growth and just using it as well.
All right. One of my favorite people is here with us. Someone I've known for a long time now, probably over a decade. Ben Blanquera, currently as the VP of Technology and Sustainability at Rackspace, and I'm sure we're going to dive into some of that as well, but you've had a number of roles that you have been in this particular space. I know you worked at the Columbus Collaboratory for a while mm-hmm. on the data science side, mm-hmm. And you've also been a pillar of the community in Columbus and the Ohio ecosystem. I know you also run the CIO forum here in Columbus. So you do a lot, you know a lot, you know a lot of people, you've seen a lot of things. And so I'm just excited for you to join us today and kind of discuss some of the trends that you're seeing in terms of agentic in the enterprise. I think it's such a buzzy term.
Oh,
lots of people are experimenting with it. Few are actually doing anything with it. And I know the folks that you work with at Rackspace are actually deploying agentic mm-hmm. systems into production. And you just announced a partnership as well that I think mm-hmm. would be really interesting to talk about. So mm-hmm. yeah, with that, anything else you would add?
I'm just damn glad to be here, Reagan.
welcome to AI or Die.
All right. Well, you know, I think it's AI and Thrive at this point.
Right. I know. We picked the name, and I still stand by it. Honestly,
it's a good name.
So why don't you give us a little bit of, like, just at a high level from an agentic perspective, what's happened in the last 6 months from an agentic lens and where are we at today? And then maybe some examples of
sure.
how you all are thinking about it at Rackspace.
Sure. This whole Gen AI wave is moving faster, and, you know, what they call the half-life of technology is getting shorter by the day, and so you know, we've had this view that says, you know, not can I just generate things with generative AI in terms of querying and, hey, tell me this. Now we can create these essentially coworkers that can do work, you know, autonomously, and so there's this growing wave about, oh, there's this thing that, you know, is an agent that can, hey, I can give it a set of things it wants to do. It can work. It has reasoning, and it says, hey, if it can't do this, can do this, can access data. It's a coworker, right? And so this broad notion of creating a coworker that you can be a thought partner with, that can do things for you, that can interact with other agents, it is fully evolving the technology to create agents 100% there, right? And so what we're seeing now is the ability for enterprises to understand what it means for them is the understanding gap. It's not a technology gap, it's an understanding gap at this point. But, you know, how do you re-engineer process? How do you integrate a new coworker and what becomes a parallel associated with that? So there's the what's possible from a business outcome and how do I think about my business processes in a different way. There's a gap there that folks are trying to understand. The technology is saying, hey, let's go. I can do this. I can build an agent. The security and data governance folks are like, whoa, slow down. Slow the horse down. Help me to understand what it's accessing, what it's doing. And you know, the technology vendors are saying, hey, I can build you an agent. I can build you an agent. I can build you an agent, right? Because yes, the tools to build it are there. But there's a heck of a difference between, you know, doing pilot and prototype and doing it enterprise scale. Massive, massive difference. And so we just recently completed a study, and I think this is symptomatic or what do you call it, representative of what's actually happening in the AI world, is that what we're seeing is AI at scale is where what is there's a growing gap between enterprises who are getting it and moving AI at scale and folks who are talking about it. And in our most recent research, we did a study of 1,400 companies out there essentially, and we identified that really only 13-14% of companies are doing AI at scale, which means they've put it into their strategy, they've got everyone up to speed, they've got investment, they're doing all the things around doing at scale, and the gap is growing, right? Those are the folks that are going to disrupt your industries, right? Or the AI leaders.
It's so interesting you mentioned like treating these agents like employees, because I've mm-hmm. heard that paradigm a ton. And I think mm-hmm. what's fascinating is, to your point, the paradigm we're using here is that a person has a job description and they do tons of tasks. Yep. And sometimes those tasks are execution based and sometimes they're strategic. And at the end of the day, they're taking action. They're accountable for those actions. We can kind mm-hmm. of monitor how they're doing from a performance perspective. Exactly. When we think about agents, it's almost like breaking down all of those jobs into individual tasks and combining some of the lower level tasks of different jobs into mm-hmm. one system. And I think you had rightfully called this out, like re-engineering, rethinking process is required. It's not just, you can't just take the existing ecosystem and then rip and replace with automation. There's a whole other design aspect to it.
Absolutely.
Do you have some examples of either systems you guys have implemented on the agentic side mm-hmm. or that you've seen that like demonstrate that?
Oh, absolutely. At Rackspace, we have this view of let's make our own IT patient zero, right? If, you know, this is like, if you can't do it to yourself, why are you out there sharing it? You should do it for others. So and what's interesting is we have this point of view, and this is really interesting, you know, AI costs money, right? The sort of all these, and so what we've said is, you know what, we can be smart how we implement that, and then I'll create some savings essentially that allow us to fund this other stuff, right? And so we have created this challenge, like, hey, you know what, we're smart folks. Anyone can go back and ask for more money. Why don't we figure out how to self-fund this sucker, right? And so we're like, yeah, we got this. We got this. So we started, for example, looking at IT service desk, right? This is, you know, this could be, hey, I need a new computer. Hey, I need a new RSS token. So when you look at sort of the service desk process with ticketing, IT service management, there's a whole set of processes. And so historically, the process has been, you know, someone goes, logs into their portal, says, I need XYZ. It gets assigned to someone. Someone does their thing and they triage it. And then they go to another system, perhaps ServiceNow, to provision things. So there's, you know, the human exchange of their information. Someone does it, then they connect to lots of other systems. They click, hey, okay, you're good. So what we said, hey, that's a perfect use case, right? So one of the interesting things is when we think about workflow, the other sort of component is we need to make sure these tools are where people are already at. We can't make them go to something else. So what we did was we said, hey, you know what? Within our Teams portal, where everyone lives anyhow, and it could be, you know, it could say Slack for other companies, right? You know, how do we create an agent that people can just ask a question? Hey, I need this. I need a new computer. I need this. And that agent can then go into the systems and say, oh, yes, you are qualified. No, you're not qualified. Here's what your options are, right? And it's a conversation and an interaction, right? And then if someone, then it turns into, okay, there's an action resulting from that, which is, hey, give this person access to something. Right. And then it goes into the right system and we have different access systems that, yep, request and it's automatically provisioned.
Do you have a human in the loop along that process at all? Or are you automating a lot of this?
We're automating a lot. You know, what we do is we start out with human in the loop. Right. So someone's monitoring this thing. So it's almost like when you start doing process automation, you've got to make sure your the process is stable enough so you can understand where the edge cases are and what happens here. So you can't start out automating. You have to start out with human in the loop, because guess what? Most folks don't actually know what's actually happening in all their processes. They understand what happy path looks like. They don't understand edge cases. And so we have a crawl, walk, run sort of methodology that says, okay, let's start out with, okay, let's put a human in a loop. And then once we see it's stable, then you go, then you have more, you build in observability. So, you know, when there's something that says it's stuck. And here's something that's really interesting. The models associated with the AI agents and things like that, we have to keep tweaking them and learning in context for that. And so what we've learned is, you know, agentic AI, yes, we've implemented, we've created scale for IT service desk, but you have to keep monitoring it and keep improving it. And so that's
I get these questions all the time. I'm like, yes, it's hard to get something deployed once, for sure. But like the iterative process over time and making sure that it's continuing to serve the end user or the system appropriately over time is actually the really hard part.
That's the really hard part. The sexy part is going into production the first time.
Right.
The hard part is running it. No one wants to be doing run work.
You should ask a question. How many times did you go to prod and then roll it back and take it out?
That's right. That's right.
Because going to prod is fun. It's a great milestone.
Oh, it's exciting. It. Yay. We have a launch party, right? But you know what? Make your money or you lose money in production, right? You have to look at, you know, for example, we always look like, what's the actual uptick of usage, right? Just like you throw a system in, but if it's not actually being used, what's the point? And so what we've learned is agents is a really cool technology, but this is an org change challenge, not a technology challenge more than anything.
That's right? Why I wanted to go back to that, because I'm sure our listeners will be interested, that differentiator of the 13% who are actually doing it and starting to build that gap from everybody else. You covered so many areas just in this example around workflow understanding, monitoring over time, making sure to understand the ROI and how it pays for itself, the change management did you guys get a sense from studying these companies, like what was the key differentiator? Is it all the above, or is there really main ones that they leaned into that
separate? No, it's all the above. Yeah. You know, first, you know, one, they have done all the things associated with workforce readiness at all levels. Leaders know how to lead in this world. Their users understand what it is they're talking about, and it's being seen because there's a lot of fear, right? There's a lot of FUD, right, associated with what this might do to my job. And what we're seeing is those companies have figured out how to, you know, get their workforce to understand what it means and then embrace it. Like, you know, we think this creates superpowers for companies, right?
Yeah, some of these big companies out there, fear-mongering in the media is not helping anyone.
No, it's not. So there's a big education associated with workforce readiness and ongoing training, right? With that. Then there's workforce. Then there's investment. You know, we saw that, you know, self-reported, the level of value in investing was 4x for these companies. Than the ones who are laggards, you know, 13% and everyone else, right?
Well, then that echoes the study that we just talked about too from Andreessen Horowitz, which Ben will have to send to you. It's the budgets were way larger than people had anticipated. And they're moving out of innovation into the operational budgets now too, which is great. That's a good signal.
That's a great signal that, you know, you got to put a little seed money in. And we were having a conversation earlier with another speaker or conversation. It's like the J curve. Anything new, right? You invest, your productivity drops, and then it goes up, right? And if you're not willing to do that, then what you're looking for is, you know, you're looking for that quick fix, and you don't really want to work. And so there is some work associated with that J curve that needs to happen. Then there's a component around just basic strategy, right? That this is not a add on. It's in a big enabler. Like that's the first conversation is, you know, how can we disrupt? How can we redo things? And I really think though, the winners we're seeing are really looking at AI as it is a superpower. Let's not just look at it as a productivity tool. It is a superpower to free up our team members from the mundane so that they can focus their thoughts on the amazing things for their business.
So let's run an example here. I'd love to hear Ben Blanker advice. Let's say I'm a, you know, leader within an enterprise today.
Yep.
We've done some training. We have Microsoft Copilot. We've turned it on. We've taught people how to use it. Mm-hmm. My C-level's excited, but they haven't really put a bunch of budget in yet, but they're thinking about it.
Yep.
We've dabbled around with some Gen AI tools. But at what point do they take a deep dive into agentic? So like that can seem like a huge leap for a lot of these enterprises. So what does that gap look like? Because a lot of companies we see are in that description I just gave you. And they're not quite sure how to get past that. Like, do they need to establish more of a competency around Gen AI before making the leap? Can they make the leap now? What are you seeing?
Yeah, what I'm seeing is companies are, you know, everyone's gotten past the Gen AI, got it, right? And there's a gazillion use cases around that, right? But when we look at sort of the agentic, what we're seeing is the most, and this is being third of that 13% of leaders that we talked about that in our study, 72% already had agents in play. Right? They're already there.
That's pretty impressive, actually.
That is a, and their ROI on AI was twice the other folks. Right.
That's not surprising. That part's not surprising.
Yeah, they've gone down the
curve. Automation piece is easier to calculate ROI on than these like generalized productivity tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, but I do think there is a maturity curve before you get to agentic AI where you got to have some muscle around AI, you know, Gen AI and AI in your company. I think
It sounds like don't just jump off the cliff into agentic.
No. Granted, my guess is there's a whole new ecosystem of folks who will sell. Here's my legal agent. Here is so like they'll be off the shelf, domain very specific, stack specific solutions. If you have this, and this, here's an agent. We can plug it in. Now the question of how those actually work. And what the security profile looks like and where they're hosted, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But
I've played around with some agents. I like internally we've played around with some sales and marketing, like go-to-market agents. And I'm finding two things are really not great.
Okay.
If you don't have a super well-defined process. So if you're still like figuring it out or iterating on it, and or the data you have is not highly accurate or super specific to support that process, especially if it's highly contextualized information like marketing, right? Where you can get the tone and the writing styles wrong really quickly, or even sales. I mean, sales, as we know, is very human-based, very relationship-based. People can kind of sniff out when there's an AI behind it. And so those types of things I'm actually finding the agents are not very good at. But I love the example you gave, which is on the IT side, because those are very like matter of fact. Like you either do have permission for this or you don't. You're requesting a laptop or you're not. Like those are pretty black and white, you know, examples of things that the agent has to evaluate. So are you seeing other examples that seem to be working well from on the agentic side? I know you guys had a couple of things deployed.
So ITSM is one, right? You know, we're starting to see a lot of emerging agents with human in the loop in sort of legal and procurement kind of world, right? Someone's got to review some content. What does it say? It needs to be sent to someone else for review. They go do this. And so there's like a loop associated iteration of contracts, right?
Yeah, let's get that loop automated.
NDAs, right? Let's just do NDAs.
Seriously. Yeah, like, MNDAs, NDAs, like those are just the most simple
things, right? And you can argue at some point it's going to be an agent for both companies, that's just going to interact. They're just going to go back and forth because they're going to have context what they've accepted before.
Yep.
Right.
That's why we love consistent lawyers, by the way. They learn your preferences and your risk tolerances, and they, if you go to different ones, they have to start all over on kind of adjusting to that.
Yeah, so we're seeing, in sort of the legal sort of framework, some emerging, because it's very much lots going back and forth with information. We're seeing in the financial, the ability to, roll up your financials, because you have to double check things, you have to audit things. There's lots of places you go to make that happen. We're seeing coding, right? Jeez, that's a whole other
killer
world,
use
right?
case.
That is, yeah. Like, in agents who, it's kind of like, we've seen, engineering teams that they know how to use, I use Claude for this. I use OpenAI. They know what things to use for what. And they have things checking each other. Then they check the audit, they create the test cases. Then they've got, so they've got like armies of folks with very specialized tasks. And they orchestrate it for the exact, for the total pipeline.
I wonder, so, that's the biggest hurdle, I wonder, though, is that task orchestration across agents and humans to make this all
together.
Like having that conductor in right.
It's hard.
Kind of like who is the conductor? How do they know enough about the spaces to be able to make that happen?
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a great segue to we talked earlier about we have a partnership with an organization called Semaphore.ai, right? And so what's pretty clear is agentic AI is here. What's pretty clear is when we're talking about agentic AI, we're not talking like a handful of agents. We're talking thousands in an enterprise, right? And when you start talking thousands, these are thousands of employees. How do you deploy? How do you control? How do you put the power of this into the business users so you're not stuck through IT, right? How do you do all that? And how do you make it so it's, security's there and auditability is there, all those kind of things, and the orchestration, as you've said. And so with Semaphore, what we love about it is there's a couple things. One, if a business user can create a runbook, this is what we do, blah, blah, blah. It can ingest it, create the agent, and then orchestrate the agent. All right. And part of this then is within this platform, there's sort of the business person can do it, right? Just with a runbook. You can pre-built all your rules for access and all those kind of things. It's got built-in observability for, this task got done here. Here's what happened, right? So from a auditability transparency, which is trust, is really important. Which means, okay, I told folks, look, I used to be do a lot of project management, and the mantra was, "In God I trust. Everyone else needs to give me documentation." Period. Right? If I can't see it in a piece of paper, it didn't happen. I don't believe you. And so when we think about that for agents, having logs, having auditability is really, really important to create trust. And so Semaphore allows us is a product that you wrap services around to get implemented and things like that. But then the enterprise can just use it as their orchestration platform. And guess what? There is an extensibility that allows you that, if I connect to other agents and that the work of that agent is orchestrated by us, then I have observability for that other agent. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I know we're getting to the top of time here. You mentioned the study that you all did and this partnership announcement. Where can people go to find out more information about those things?
If you go to rackspace.com or fair.rackspace.com, it's all there. Or look me up on LinkedIn. I'm happy to send you stuff.
We'll link. Yeah, I was going to say we'll link your profile so people can reach out to you and connect with you as well.
Yeah. Just one more question, Ben. Is there any other events coming up that folks would know about? I know we have a lot of listeners in the Columbus area as well. Any other things you want to plug just while we're here?
Oh, of course. So We always got stuff going on here. So August 26th and 27th. So August 27th is a thing called CIO Tomorrow, which is you know, a bunch of CIO gathering and lots of great content there. But the night before is called IT Martini, which is a wonderful, fun gathering of the technology community. So that's in August. September 3rd, we have a thing called Cloud Nirvana, which is going to be at OCLC. And the topic around that is tech meets humanity. So that's about the people side of technology and AI and what people are doing. So that's going to be really interesting. Our last one was about AI and the SDLC, which was amazing. And so we had that, but this that's September 3rd. We have, the Data Connect conference, October 2nd and 3rd.
Yeah.
Boom, boom. That is like the most
we'll
amazing.
We'll be there.
the most amazing conference people should go to anyone data analytics AI. Here's the thing: the context is the world is changing so quickly that I think a lot of people's success is going to be governed by the people they hang out with. That is an old axiom, but it is truer than ever because I can't read all the stuff I want to read. So I just call Reagan and say, "Hey Reagan, decode this. Give me my secret decoder ring because I can't figure this stuff."
How many times I've been told that.
See, this is not new.
That's why we're so happy to hang out with you on today's episode, Ben. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you for obviously being a friend of the show and supporting Data Connect and Align AI and everybody else too. So thank you for joining. For listeners, this was episode 25 of AI or Die. You can check us out on getalignai.com or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. Ben, thank you again. I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining.
Nick, thank you so much. Brendan and Reagan, always a pleasure to see y'all. Have a great day, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.